You're listening to Nutty Bites. Good for you.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuchas, and today's episode is going to be a little different than normal. So this episode, I am actually issuing a trigger and a content warning. So this episode, I am not deleting the swear words because my guest Matt procured a whole bunch of sound clips for me, and there's a lot of swears in them. And I don't think that it would really flow well to cut them all out, especially considering the topic of this show does detail mental health, suicide, things that may not be suitable for small ears, but maybe mature ears with some content and some conversation can get into, and some, possibly some sexual content. So no point in deleting swears if this is not going to be kid appropriate. So please know that. So if you are in the car and you're listening with small ears in the back, please turn this episode off. I don't want them to hear that. But with me today, I have Matt.
Hi. I love that I just bring my own explicit tag with me wherever I go.
That's okay. You're just going to make Jason jealous because he's always trying to swear on my podcast and then I edit it out. So Matt is from the Hooplecast.
Yeah, I do a podcast called Hooplecast. Should I plug it right now or do you want me to wait till
the end?
Well,
go through all the links. Just mention where people may have heard you before because you've got Hooplecast and Spartacast.
Spartacast is about the television show Spartacus, and I do a video game podcast called Matt is Wrong About Games with my friend Matt. And I'm occasionally on other podcasts like Calavici Fashion Cast or Redemption Cast or... This Nutty is my Bites. First time on the Nutty Bites podcast. I'm so excited.
I know. I can't believe it's taken me this long to be on the Nutty Bites podcast.
I basically invited myself onto this.
It was great.
You have to watch a show and you should podcast about it. And also I should be on your podcast.
Absolutely. And that's a great way to get on the show. And we heard the dulcet tones of...
Steph Smith.
Yes. This is where you introduced yourself.
From Potential Cast and Redemption Cast and We Don't Want to Wait. And is there anything else I do?
iZombie with Robin and Steph.
iZombie with Robin and Steph, yeah.
The one that has your name on it?
The biggest one, probably. Yes.
So I forgot to mention that Hooplecast started as a Deadwood podcast, and now we talk about HBO shows in general, and also do commentary tracks for films, but only the films that star Timothy Oliphant.
Yes, which are awesome, by the way.
Nutty was just on my podcast talking about True Blood and the Pacific, so...
Yes, that is one of those podcasts that if you want to hear me swear, I'll swear there.
I know. I feel pressured that I should swear on this.
Now. You don't have to swear. Don't worry about it. Excellent. So I haven't even talked about what we're talking about. We're talking about the show Please Like Me. If you're in the United States, you can find it on Hulu. If you're in Canada, you can find it on Netflix because Canada's awesome that way. It's a Australian show, right? I don't know what channel it's on, but it starts out, it's a show about a 20-something guy who kind of realizes he's gay and his mom is dealing with a mental health crisis. And it's a lot about family and emotions, right?
Yeah.
His girlfriend tells him. Yeah, it is a hang, because you like these people, these friends, this family, they're all very sweet people. It's his girlfriend who tells him he's gay, actually.
Yes. There we go.
Why can't I ever just let myself properly enjoy things? Why can't I ever just be in the moment, you know? I know today is brilliant.
It's sunny, we're in the first world, we just ordered a $19 sundae, you know, delicious, but all I can think about is my rubbish face. I'm obsessing, I mean, it's just I'm turning 21 soon, and this is as good as my face is ever going to get. This is it. It's all downhill from here. I was hoping puberty would do a better job, but no. Puberty did a good job with you. You used to be really awkward to look at. Incredible, Claire. Don't you think this is incredible? What an incredible Sunday. Isn't it just mind-blowing to think we actually get to eat this?
Josh, I want to talk to you about something.
Oh. No. No. No, you don't.
I think we should break up.
Oh. Oh, that's bad.
I just... I kind of feel like we've drifted, you know?
This isn't good at all.
Also, you're gay.
What? No, I'm not.
Josh, you're probably gay.
I'm not.
I mean, we could still be friends, if you like. Wouldn't be really that different, would it?
Is $19 Sunday suddenly pretty fucking humiliating?
Yeah. So that's how the show starts out. He gets dumped by his girlfriend, and she tells him he's gay. And I like what Steph said. It's a hangout comedy.
Yeah, it's one of those shows where you're like, don't these people go to work? Don't these people go to school?
Well, and for like the first two seasons, he doesn't have a job at all. He's just a student, but you never see him in school.
Yeah, and you find out that his dad pays for the house. And
yeah.
Hmm.
And I like the food, because every episode title is food.
Yes. And he can cook.
Yeah, that great shot of the $19 sundae.
Oh, I love the food. Regular listeners know I am a foodie. So watching this was just so much fun, because as excited as he got about food, I got excited. And in season three, they go to a particular restaurant, and I want to try that. I don't think I can afford it.
That restaurant in Melbourne, yeah, we should all go on like a pilgrimage, because it looks amazing, very trendy.
Yes.
Fancy restaurant with avant-garde food.
The $900 meal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cuisine.
Yeah, like I love to watch these shows as a anthropological thing. You know, like what is Australian culture?
Yeah.
You know, what are the characteristics of Australian people? And I really other than shrimp on the Barbie, you know, what do we really know about Australia?
Mm. Well, I lived there for 9 months, but that was a long time ago. That was my third year of college, of university. So we're talking 16 years, 17 years ago. I don't know, something like that. And they were very behind the times in a lot of ways. And I think they've like caught up. When I said behind the times, I wasn't necessarily meaning politically or but actually more like technologically and kind of like culturally. I was a university student, and they throttled my internet access. They gave us like a data cap.
Oh.
And I kept having to have my cap increased.
Because
number one, I wasn't used to it. But also, I'm trying to communicate with friends and family back home and do studying and surf the internet, because I'm an internet person. And I was just like so stifled by just little things like that, but also like grocery shopping and things they didn't have.
Yeah.
You know, but well, I think we can play this clip later, but there is a very funny line where Josh is telling all his friends and family kind of like what he thinks about them over at Christmas lunch. And he says to May, like, oh, you know, there is one thing about you. You bought me that book about like easy recipes, and you know I know how to cook. And she goes, oh, that's cheap. All right, fair enough.
Yeah. So
it is a very food heavy show. Yeah.
I do want to talk about the characters, because I do want to mention May is one of the characters that I absolutely adore. I think she's fantastic. So it's Josh, and his parents are split up, and his mom's the one with the mental health crisis, but his dad is dating somebody, and then he lives with his friend Tom, and then his girlfriend Claire, now his ex-girlfriend Claire, comes over a lot. And this is a pretty tight-knit cast that we've got some people coming in and some people going out. But they really, like, when a character becomes part of the story, they're there. They're there for good, it feels like. They definitely make them part of that interwoven. Oh, and Auntie Peg. Auntie Peg is amazing, actually, because you expect her to be so... Well, we'll get into that in the spoilers.
Don't you kind of expect a lot of the characters, or some of the characters, to be less sort of great and rounded as you when you first met them? Like,
yeah.
Claire, who is the ex-girlfriend, could have been written as somebody who was really angry that she spent her youth. He could have said, oh, you know, you've been lying to me or whatever. She could have been difficult. She wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's lovely. And the new wife, right? Like the two women, the wife and the ex-wife, they could hate each other and have conflict, but they don't. They never do. They're very understanding.
The only conflict they have is with the husband.
Yeah.
Which is how it should be. I mean, I know for me, like, it's a lot better not to be fighting with the other woman kind of a thing, because it's not her fault. You know, that's just one of those things. It's especially in this situation, because the father didn't leave the mom for this woman. That he had already left her and met this woman later.
Oh, did I kind of have the impression that he had cheated on her at some point, or had an affair at some point?
I think he did, but not with May.
Okay. There so that was something women. That happened. Maybe it was revealed at that dinner in the fourth season. Yeah. I think.
But and it's weird because it's like, it feels like a drama, but it's very funny. And then like the characters seem, especially the main character, he doesn't seem to have, you know, he's always saying that he's not good with emotion, but he's actually is. He just, it presents differently. And it ends up being a very strong emotional show that I got so captivated by these characters that I just had to keep watching. I'm so glad that I was able to binge watch it and didn't have to wait every week for a new episode, because then I got to see what, you know, what happened, and I didn't have to sit there in limbo wondering, you know, all right, so what's going on with this relationship? Even though it's nothing external is happening, it's more about their emotions and how they relate to each other.
Saying that you're how you binged the show and how you were glad you could. I did find an article about from the creator, Josh Thomas, who says, oh, I hate it when people binge my show. It, for them, it's like they watch it in like 2 weeks. But for me, it's like years of my life.
I can understand that. I can understand that. The other thing that's really fascinating about this is that Josh Thomas is his name, I think you said.
Yeah.
He wrote, directed, created all of this stuff. And he is the age of the character. He's basically a 20-something with so much talent and such great comedy, you know, comedic timing, and the ability to put such a story that can resonate with people of all ages out there. I am super impressed. That's a lot of talent.
I read that he won a comedy festival, like a huge comedy festival, when he was like 16.
Wow.
Or 16 or 17. Yeah. That's how he got started.
That's amazing. And then later on in the show, comedian Hannah Gatsby becomes part of the cast, and she's amazing. I mean, I had heard about her before Matt ever told me about this show, which, by the way, I know we touched on it, but basically Matt said, you have to go watch this show. And I don't just watch shows because people tell me to. He was like, no, you have to watch this show.
Well, I watch shows that Matt tells me to watch.
As it should be, for now and forever, for all.
That's a good, honestly. So I started watching Deadwood, not because of Matt, actually because of Bob, because Bob was so excited about the show and that Matt was going to be doing an intercast for it. And then Bob passed away and I was like, well, I'm watching it for Bob. And I was so happy that I did, because Deadwood was such a big deal. So, yeah, I think I'll have to take on that thing where if Matt tells me to watch it, I'll watch it. The other thing is, one time when Matt and I were podcasting, he told me this story about a magpie attacking him.
Yeah. I can't remember the context of that story, but when I lived in Australia, I was attacked by a magpie. Like, legit attacked. I think I had seen a movie or I got lunch or something, and I was walking across this big open field back to the university, and I felt this thing slam into the side of my head, and I thought somebody in the field had kicked a soccer ball around, and the soccer ball had slammed into my head. But I look around. There are no people. But there's a magpie sitting on the fence, looking like a smug son of a bitch, because if I can swear, I'm going to swear, buddy. And I was like, oh my, you flew into my head, didn't you, you little bastard? Then it started flying around above me and like dive bombing at me. And
were you near its nest or something?
Yeah, I must have been.
But magpies are just evil.
It chased me into a caravan park. And I ran like I was in a slasher movie away from the killer. Like, you know, I was terrified. And then a couple of days later on TV, there was it's Magpie mating season. Watch out, they'll swoop down on you. And I was like, oh, well, thanks for that warning. 2 days later, like, not that it would have made a difference because I was so oblivious, but it was traumatic.
Birds are scary. Are they like are they the size of crows?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, I'm not sure.
So
they're noted for being very aggressive during mating season.
Episode 2 or 3, Josh tells this story about a magpie attacking his penis, and I just lost it because of Matt's story. And now it wasn't that the magpie had hit Matt in the head. In my head, Josh's story was Matt's story.
I don't know how I feel about that, but
I'm
glad you retained that story for it.
It's just so weird. Like, certain things will stick out in my head, and I'm like, I just think this is so funny because Matt recommended this, and he's the one with a story like that. And like, as soon as I get into it, there's a magpie story. I'm like, what?
Never. I didn't even connect the dots.
So this is an awesome show. There are times that you are going to cry. There are times that you're going to get emotional. But I think it's worth it. And I feel better having watched it.
And sometimes you're going to say, I can't believe they went there. Or,
yeah,
wow.
And there's a lot of great cuddle scenes. A lot of great kettle scenes. And at this point, we're going to move into the spoiler section. So if you actually want to watch the show and you don't want to be spoiled, stop listening, go watch the show, and come back.
And you should.
Yeah, it's really good.
Because there's 32, 25-minute episodes.
Yeah, they're short seasons, short episodes, but a whole bunch of story to really sink your teeth into. So let's go into spoilers. So the mom tries to commit suicide right from the get-go, and I am all about putting realistic mental health in our fiction out there.
You want the public to have a realistic idea of mental health instead of what you've seen in, like, in the 80s or on television. The wrong information
can be dangerous.
Society. Yeah.
And
I feel like this is very authentic.
So much. And so I've worked a little bit in the field, and I have known people that have been in institutions, and I've worked in certain facilities. So a lot of what they show is pretty dead on from my experiences. And I agree with you, Steph. I mean, like, to me, one of the things that drive me nuts is when there's wrong information out there and it can be dangerous, you know, like 13 Reasons, which I did enjoy, but that's another topic. That's a show with context, and no, I'm not watching season 2. Also, one of the things that drives me nuts is when mental health is exploited in fiction, you know, and sensationalized, you know, this idea that, oh, there's mental health, they must be the killer, or, you know, turning somebody into, like, oh, she's schizophrenic, so she's the magic pixie dream girl or whatever, is very frustrating as well. Like, I haven't seen the movie. I'm told I should. But when the movie Split came out, I was, nope, I don't want to see it, because that's the kind of thing I don't like seeing. I don't like seeing somebody take a real diagnosis and then turn that into exploitive fiction.
Yeah. And the thing about, like, depression and, you know, a person that has suicidal thoughts, they don't constantly look depressed.
Yeah.
They can seem fine, and you have no idea what's going on in their mind. And that is because Rose, a lot of times, especially towards the end, she seemed, well,
she
I don't
seemed
know.
Like she kind of got a little upswing.
Yeah, she kind of got a little manic there. But there were a lot of times when she was still in the hospital and she seemed like everything was fine, but obviously it wasn't if she was still in care.
Exactly.
I don't think I pulled this clip, but there is a time when she says to Hannah, like, I don't want to feel the same way at a friend's wedding as I do at their funeral. And that's what it feels like being on meds is like. So she knows she shouldn't go off of it, but she hates being on it. So it's like, what do you do? Like, oh, the conflict that somebody who has a mental illness like that must have all the time.
And that's one of, like, the big issues. It's, There's that whole scene when Hannah and Rose, they're talking about it, and it's, I'm thinking about going off my meds. And Hannah says, well, you know, when you're thinking that, that's because they're working.
Yeah.
And that it's when the meds are working that you start to think, well, I don't need them anymore. And in the show, Hannah said, because I've been off my meds for like 2 weeks now and I'm real seriously hurting myself. Mm. Hannah's self-injury was brutal.
Yeah.
That was brutal. I've seen self-injury, but that was one that was, that was hard to watch.
I pulled a bunch of different clips from like the home, like, mm-hmm. like not the mental home or whatever, the, yeah. you know, and about the suicide. So I don't know. You want to just pick one? I'll say that in the pilot, one of my like favorite moments is after Josh has sex for the first time with a boy, he gets up and he brushes his teeth.
Ah, here we go.
All you hear, like he's playing the voice messages because he's been kind of in his own world and like sort of discovering this new great thing about himself. And in the meantime, his phone is blowing up with messages, when he plays them back, they get so much more urgent and urgent. And you're like, what is happening?
Yeah, he turned his
really
phone
great
off.
Tension builder.
Yeah.
Received at 11:13 a.m.
Josh, it's your dad. Don't worry, mate. Mum's okay. She's okay. She's been moved to a ward. You awake?
Received at 10:15 a.m.
Josh, it's your dad. Mike, where are you? Call me back.
Received at 9 a.m.
Hey, Josh. Your dad called and he told me what happened. I hope that you're okay, and if you need anything, please just let me know.
Received at 8:40 a.m.
Fuck, Josh. Fuck. Mum. Fuck. Fuck. Call me.
Josh.
Jeffrey's
in the room. Who's wearing a shirt? 09 a.m.
Josh?
Lovey,
I need some help.
Tom, I think I need you to drive me to the hospital.
What?
I need you to drive me to the hospital.
Which hospital?
I don't know. Just get in the car.
Yeah. So I will say the sound of him brushing makes me squick. But the fact that like the brushing never changed pace while I'm watching, I'm like, you're just going to keep brushing your teeth listening to all of that? But then he has an emotional reaction and I was like, okay. But yeah, it's really profound. And it just kind of, I have to say, like, that's what it feels like. You're in your own world. You're doing whatever. Your life is fine. And then suddenly somebody who's so important to you, you find out has done something horrible. And that's what that feels like.
And Alan, he kind of makes it about himself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, do you think she did it because of me? No,
wait,
Dad.
Wait, we got a clip for that, right?
Mm. This is also a good May clip because you can see
how mean she is.
She's amazing.
She's mean to him, but in like a loving way, kind of like how you sort of needle people you really care about, and you do it because you know that they can take it because you know that you love them.
Yeah.
But also she tells him like, it's not about you. Your ex-wife has a mental illness. Like she could be the bitchy new wife, but she's not.
But she's not. Yeah.
She totally gets it.
How long have you been in the car?
Your father told me to wait here for a moment. That was 6 hours ago.
What are you talking about? I left you the keys and I brought you a drink.
Like a dog. Josh, I'm sorry to hear about your mother.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, me.
Hey, have you got the parking ticket?
No, you took it. Your father thinks it is his fault because of the divorce.
Well, clearly it is.
Oh, yes, of course it is. If you break up with someone, what is the point for them in living? They may as well end it. They have experienced perfect love. And they'll never find happiness again, so they may as well end it because you are so perfect.
It's not like that.
Alan, I promise you, no one is attempting suicide because of fat men like you, dumb them.
Yes, well,
she has a mental disorder.
Yes, I understand that, May, but I do
think... Dad, I think she's right. I don't know if you've seen your face lately.
It's like a squirrel.
And, you know, it's like she could be this stereotype. but she's not. And they even address that at one point, like somebody calls her a mail order bride at one point and Alan loses it. But May is just, she's written so well because, you know, on paper, if you heard somebody talk to their significant other that way, you'd say that's abusive. But then when you're watching it, you see the way he reacts to it, you know, and that she's using it as comedy to get her point across. And she really lays it out there. She has a mental disorder. This is about her. It's not about you. And while there are things that we can do to support somebody, we can't fix other people. Just like we can't completely break them either without being completely horrible and monstrous. If you know what I mean. I'm sure there are people that can break someone, but I mean, like, just in normal activities. Like, we are not responsible for our loved ones' mental disorders.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something that happens. And I think that's really important to cover.
I'm thinking of the episode in, I guess it's season two, when Josh and his mother go on that, they go to Tasmania, and they go into this hike. And the entire
episode.
Yes.
Amazing episode. It's what I would call a departure episode because it doesn't have the rest of the cast. It's in a different location, and it's just two people basically having an extended conversation.
Yeah.
Almost like a play, but it's set outdoors, and it's gorgeous, wonderfully shot. And you just get this push and pull between the mom and her son, and how the son, like Josh, like he understands intellectually that his mother trying to kill herself isn't about him and that she's sad and it's a disease, but he's also angry despite that.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that when she doesn't get out of bed, she's like, I know it's your disease that's keeping you in bed, but if you don't get out, then how can you ever get better? And the frustration and kind of like he feels trapped and she's trapped, and it's such a believable dynamic, you know, and dialogue that they have.
Yeah, and it really does explore like some of the codependency that you can't seem to escape when someone you love is that sick. And it also shows how through as a viewer, I'm watching it and I don't really know what Josh is thinking a lot of the times, because he does present himself as closed off and not having emotions, even though he does. So this is like when we finally get Josh's full inner thoughts about his mom's illness. And he's fully honest here. And she's fully honest, which is pretty amazing because, you know, I mean, I think in the everyday trappings, they're trying so hard to make it easier for each other that they can't be fully honest. So I'm just going to play that clip now.
So angry, Ginger.
Wow, you're really stuck on this, yeah? Do you want me to get angry? Do you wish I was angry?
I just want to understand what's going through your head, Josh.
You just try and understand when you do things like this, that you're doing them because you're ill, and then I don't get angry the same way you wouldn't get angry at someone with a cold for having a runny nose.
Sort of unfeeling.
No, I mean, like, sure, sometimes I got angry. Like, it seems like a pretty crazy way to get my attention, but also, I promise, my anger just never felt like a priority.
I wasn't trying to get your attention.
Really?
No, look, see, a psychiatrist I saw early on asked me if I was trying to get attention. That really surprised me.
What were you trying to do then?
I was trying to kill myself.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I can't use attention if I'm dead, can I?
The third time you tried to kill yourself, that was like a day where we didn't know if your stomach had been pumped in time. If it had been pumped in time, they assured me you would be fine. But if it hadn't, you were gonna die slowly over 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You're my mum. Yeah, I just imagine if I had to watch you die slowly over 2 weeks. Watch you kill yourself over 2 weeks. Of course, like, I was scared. I was fucking terrified. But then when I found out you were fine, then I got angry. That was an angry day for me. And sometimes when I call you at 2 p.m. and you're still in bed, not working at getting better, then I get angry then, which I know is harsh because that's your disease. It's very hard for you to get out of bed, but if we keep excusing it because it's your disease, then you're never going to get better.
No, I'm trying to get better.
Sure, just don't do it again, right?
Yeah.
I love how we people who have never experienced thoughts of suicide try to rationalize and understand when we have no idea what it's like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, you know, a lot of times people think everyone that has suicidal ideations that it's about more than ending it, you know, that they think that they're trying to get attention or it's a cry for help or it's this. And for some people, that might be a thing. But for a lot of people, they're like Rose. And I think the people making those assumptions, it makes the situation easier for them to deal with because they can't really grasp the weight of this person I care about wants to do this thing.
Yeah.
And then you have people like Anthony Bourdain or Robin Williams who are like, they're so successful and they've contributed so much to society and to culture. How can they kill themselves? And it's like, it's a disease.
Yeah. What do they have to be sad about? Well, you don't know. You're not in their head. You can't imagine it because it's never happened to you. And the anger, it's not really anger. It's frustration. It's frustration because you can't help them. You can't do anything about it. You can't change it. They can only, you know, they are the only person that can change. And, you know, when you're depressed, you can't. You just can't.
Yeah. And one of the things that I liked about this show is it shows that depression and anxiety takes many forms. Like, we didn't see one example. We got to meet Rose's friends from the hospital. We got to meet Ginger, who was always manic or always showing that front of being okay. And I think I've got one where she's interrogating Arnold.
The other mentals, right?
Yes.
Guys, there's Arnold. Arnold, Hannah, Rose is my mom, Ginger.
And what are you in for then?
Just anxiety stuff.
Anxiety stuff? What's that? What happened?
I just breakdowny stuff. I stopped showering and smiling like a teenage boy.
Yeah. Oh. I wasn't that kind of teenager.
Me neither.
Hannah, what about you? You've never told me.
I had a breakdown.
I know that. Is there anything interesting about this breakdown? I mean, what happened?
It's quite public. In a supermarket.
Supermarket?
Self-service checkout.
What happened in the supermarket? Did you steal something? Are you a kleptomaniac?
No, I just couldn't work out what kind of tuna to buy.
Tuna?
Are you in here because of tuna? There's just so many different types.
No, there isn't.
Brine, oil, spring water, chunky tuna, sandwich tuna, mayonnaise, dolphin-killing tuna, salsa.
Salmon. Why don't you just eat salmon? You're a maniac.
I just lost it. I started crying.
I was expecting more drama. You're not a maniac. You're a dickhead.
But I understand. That's the way I am with toothpaste. Why are there so many different kinds of toothpaste?
Marketing.
It's too much.
I'm just flashing back to Mr. Burns in the aisle. Catsup, ketchup. Catsup, ketchup. What's he doing? He's talking to the ketchup now.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. It's like we see that there's so many different people and different kinds of symptoms, you know, that one person, like, they can't even take a shower or brush their hair, you know, and another person looks like they're completely fine, but then they're going to injure themselves or, you know, attempt suicide or succeeded. And there's everything in between, and that, you know, somebody that seems like, okay, well, they may not be the happiest person in the world. They're going to, you know, have a breakdown over not being able to decide tuna because, for whatever reason, one of the things that I think is why we cling to like these meaningless things is a lot of times it's safer to have a breakdown over tuna than what's at the core of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the trauma that caused this or whatever it is that is the root of our issue, that's too difficult to address. So if we stress out over what tuna or toothpaste to buy, that's actually easier for our psyche to handle than to go to the really dark place. So on that happy note, it really is like, even though it sounds like these are really grim things, it's really great to see these people process it, but also to see the effect that it has on a whole family and in romantic relationships. One of my favorite scenes is, so Josh starts dating Arnold.
Arnold's a doll. He's so cute.
Okay, first off,
I'm going to disagree on parts of Arnold, but you proceed, Nutty.
Why are all these adorably cute and hot boys completely in love with Josh? Like, what is it that makes boys go nuts? I'm sure there's something, but like, I can't even get past the mole. but no, I think my problem is that Josh looks like a little boy to me, so it's a little hard. Whereas, like, even Arnold, when he's like all innocent and everything, like, that's still a man. So
some of it's a little bit of a hookup thing, fun stuff, you know, just sex. Like Ben, the character Ben, who comes over, which I actually liked him more than I ever liked Arnold. He just seemed like he had more.
I wanted to explore more with Ben. I really did. Yeah. But so one of my favorite scenes is, so Josh and Arnold are dating and Arnold has a freak out and he's like, I have to go back to the hospital. You know, he had been in the hospital to begin with, and then they were dating, and then he's like, I have to go back to the hospital. And so Josh brings him back to the hospital, and then Josh just crawls into bed with him and they take a nap together. And that to me is like one of the sweetest scenes I've ever seen on screen. And I just thought that was so adorable. And it wasn't, to me at least, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't sexual. And it wasn't about, am I losing my boyfriend? It was, this person I care about is hurting and I'm hurting and I can't do anything, but maybe I can cuddle for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was sweet. And he asked permission.
My problem with Arnold was when he wanted permission to have an open relationship and Josh was clearly not into it. And it kind of felt like, well, because you think you can do better than me and you're going to be able to have sex with other men and then be with me. And you know that I'm not going to be able to compete with that. So it's really just going to be me alone all the time. Like when they had that three-way and Josh was like completely shut out of the three-way. I'm like, this is really kind of shitty behavior, Arnold.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that some people can have those kinds of relationships, but all parties have to be in on it and comfortable with it.
Yeah,
and
I think there's all kinds of chances for it to go wrong. Like, it would be very rare that it was successful.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, because Josh wasn't into it that way. And when he does try to get a hookup, he ends up with this guy that he has to visit in the hospital because he might be dying. And it becomes a very, I shouldn't laugh, but it becomes a very serious thing because he's not really the casual, like as much as he tries to be, he's not really the casual kind of guy. He might move quickly with a guy, but.
So the guy that has the casual hookup, Ben, he has a brain condition, right?
Isn't Ben the former roommate?
No, that's Patrick.
Oh, that's Patrick. Okay, no, I wanted to explore more with Patrick. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I liked both of them. Yes. But Ben's the one with the brain tumor who...
aneurysm, yeah.
Josh is waiting. Yeah, Josh is waiting for this call. Did his brain operation go successfully? And like the whole time you might be thinking like it's TV. He's probably going to die right at the end or something. But instead the phone rings and he's like, oh, yeah, it's fine. He's fine.
But it's like... I never expected to see this person again, and they called me to come to the hospital, and I kind of got to go, but my boyfriend's in town, so what do I do? And yeah.
No, Patrick is the really good-looking younger guy who's like the new roommate in season two who kisses Josh, they get into bed, they don't have sex, Patrick doesn't want to have sex with him, and then somehow, I guess Josh made him feel uncomfortable enough to leave the house, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there is that Seinfeld element to the show where Josh is kind of an awful person, sort of, in a way.
Mm-hmm. A little selfish, right?
Yeah.
It's it doesn't seem fair to Patrick to like basically be shoved out of the house
and the dynamic and all that. Yeah.
But the problem is Patrick didn't talk about it, you know?
Right.
And it just filled Josh with insecurities. And maybe had he talked about it, because he wanted to kiss Josh and he wanted to cuddle with Josh, he just didn't want to have sex with him.
Yeah. It's in the very last episode of that season, he tells Josh, you kicked me out of your house because I wouldn't have sex with you.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't think exactly what happened, but it was there's enough of a truth to it that it's like, it doesn't portray Josh, our protagonist, in the best
light. No, it doesn't. And if Patrick were a woman, nobody would have a problem saying Josh was wrong.
Yeah.
You know, because we would sit there and go, yeah, no, that's just wrong. You're the person that owns the house hits on you and then you don't sleep with them. So you have to leave. Yeah, it's very sketchy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to blame Patrick. It's just that's a situation that happens, and it's in
true to life, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's one of these things, and they do kind of explore the different dynamics with different types of relationships, because you know, if just because you're a guy doesn't mean you want to have sex all the time with anyone, and sometimes people feel like, oh, he didn't want to have sex with me, that's a rejection. No, that just meant he didn't want to have sex with you then. You know, like, that doesn't mean that you're rejected. This idea that men are these horny rabbits that will have sex with anything at any time is just as gross as any other sexist generalization, as far as I'm concerned. It's not fair to men or women or any gender.
I'd like to segue into a clip where Josh goes on a date with a guy. His name is Mark.
You're tricking me.
Josh, he's not always the most tactful. He doesn't really coddle people. No. When they have opinions, especially when they're kind of new agey, he is very skeptical. There was one guy who they were talking about a Reiki healing, and he's like, "Oh, is that the one where you pay them not to touch you?" It's like, well, yeah, it's this ancient art. It's like 1,000 years old. And Josh is like, "Isn't it more like 70 years old?" And they look at, it's like, "What are you doing? You're looking it up right now just to prove me wrong?" It's like, "Yeah, it's 80 years old." Well, we were both wrong.
I actually love that scene, but yes.
Oh, it's exactly. So awkward.
But this one that you pulled really shows like how blunt he is about it and insensitive.
Last time I was at the hospital, my grand died.
Sorry.
Awkward for you. It's fine. So it was all very sad and we left the room. Then as I was heading down the hall, I see from her doorway that we've left a light on. And she hates wasting electricity, so I went to turn it off. But when I get there, the light isn't on. Her body was actually emanating a glow. She was such a kind woman that her spirit was glowing with light.
No.
What do you mean, no?
No. No, you're doing tricking.
You're talking about I'm telling you a story about my dead grandma.
No. You're doing, like, I know it's a gamble, yeah, but you're doing, like, you're like, trying to embarrass me. Right?
The fuck is wrong with you?
No. You're tricking, aren't you?
No.
And that's his whole approach to everything. Josh is an atheist. He doesn't believe in God. And so his Auntie Peg is very Christian. And they have this conversation while she's driving him somewhere all about God. And he's just as blunt. And he's like, in his rejection of her faith. And I laugh because, like, I don't know, just the way it's written, you can't help but laugh. But if you were sitting next to somebody in the car or at a restaurant and you heard somebody like Josh reacting this way, you'd be like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, you don't say things like that.
Yeah. And they go to church with her and they're talking very bluntly in, you know, in the pew.
Yeah, fire and brimstone and God hates gays and yeah.
Yeah, and even when Peg is gone, there is still that idea around because his phone case has Jesus
I know
on it. And like later on, there's you know, well, when you die, we won't go to heaven because God hates fags or something mm-hmm. like that. So there is, there's always, and maybe also because the theme song is very gospel sounding.
Mm-hmm.
So there seems to be all through the show this thread of religion and just honest conversation about it.
Yeah, he's the only atheist I know that has Jesus on his cell phone case. I did love, though, the pastor is up there. And so Peg tricks Josh and his boyfriend, his current boyfriend, and his mom, I think, is there, and maybe his friends, all to come to church with her. And the priest is just spouting hate against gays, and you think that she's brought him there to like convert him, mm-hmm. and, like conversion therapy or something. And then she's listening to this, and you can see her internalizing it. And then she just stands up and she's like, my grandnephew is gay, and you're telling me that the love that I have for him is wrong? No, you're wrong. Like this Bible thumper just has like this about face, which I kind of wish always happened, but unfortunately doesn't. But seeing it on TV was kind of like a wish fulfillment.
Yeah, that's probably one reason why I didn't pull that clip, because it's a little too on the nose in terms of the wish fulfillment kind of category. Also, people of that stripe, of the anti-peg conservative stripe, when they have their, and this is ironically a come to Jesus moment about about this kind of thing, it's like until they know somebody personally, it's like they can't even understand. Like it's like they don't have empathy.
Right.
My father, I just confess something personally here, because I was talking about to my father about, I don't know, a race at some point and race relations. And he said, so I finally said something like, oh, so if you knew every black person, then you wouldn't feel this way. Because he made an exception to his logic that he, whatever the logic was, I don't even remember the details of it, but he said, but he made an exception for the woman he knew at his school who was black. So it's like, oh, so you just need to know every black person, and then you can make the leap that the rest of us seem to have no problem making. And I feel the same way, kind of like way with anti-peg. It's like, until you knew Josh was gay, you were cool with this?
Yeah. Well, it's like when certain people, generally men, when they have daughters, suddenly they understand feminism, and it's like, oh wait, no, you can't treat women that way. I have a daughter. Okay, but before you had a daughter, it was okay. It was okay to hurt people, like,
because now she's just property or something.
Yeah, well, like,
I don't know.
It's like, I, you know, when you see people say, I'm a feminist because I have a mother, I have a sister, I have no, just, you don't need to have those people in your life to be a decent person, in my opinion.
I don't know. The more you know about the world and the more you read and hear other people's stories, the less you need to make a big stretch. It's just, it's empathy. You don't need to know them on a personal level to know what's right and what's wrong. I feel, I don't know.
You might gain more insight.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely know that there are things that I understand more about, say, the trans community, because I have friends that are trans, and I see some of, and I can hear their experiences. And so there's things that I might not have gotten before that I understand now. I mean, like, my thought process on that is drastically different than it was when I was 20. Of course, the world is very different too.
I would say the same thing. About that particular issue.
Yeah.
So I do believe that exposure to something like does like increase your overall awareness, but for some reason, people can't even make the jump until they personally know somebody.
Right. But I would like to say that I've always been accepting of people, no matter how they identify, and that I don't think that I would ever say, oh, it's totally okay to cut off rights to this person because I don't know anyone like that. Like, I just, it's a hard leap for me to go from, you know, to say that there's a group of people that I may not know anyone from, to say, yeah, no, we shouldn't give them rights, or we should be hateful towards them. I don't see that jump.
Well, but it's because it's framed a different way. They don't see it as taking away rights. they see it all about as about themselves.
Right.
What it means to the, you know, what it's going to mean to them personally.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like equality feels like oppression rather than leveling the playing field when you're in the position of power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow two guys getting married affects my heterosexual marriage. Mm-hmm. Somehow I got
get out of your neighborhood and see that just because you and your neighbor think the same doesn't mean that that's the way everybody thinks and sees the world.
Exactly.
So some of this show, I mean, fortunately, Josh has two parents who accept him and his sexuality.
No, yeah, this was immediately. No big deal.
Yeah.
They accepted it. Everybody else accepted it more than easier than he did, because there's a couple of episodes that it takes for
he comes out in stages.
Yeah. It's a evolution.
Yeah.
Right.
I think Auntie Peg comes out for him to his mom.
Yeah. And that's all set up with the girlfriend, with Claire at the beginning saying, you're gay. Like, he's denying it. He's got shame about it. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, he's got like great people in his life. Arnold is really his boyfriend is afraid of how his parents and family will react.
Yes.
So
very sad that way.
I pulled two clips. Mm-hmm. The first is when Arnold pretends coming out to his to Josh's father in like a role playing exercise, and then I pulled the clip where Arnold actually comes out to his parents.
Okay, so here's the Arnold coming out to Alan, who's pretending to be his father,
which may be my favorite scene in the entire show.
Oh,
maybe.
It's amazing!
It's
amazing.
Top five, at least.
Don't get hurt, can't feel anything. Will I learn? I push it down, I push it down.
Wow. Arnold, you have a beautiful voice.
Oh, don't, you idiot. You're playing his dad now, okay? He's an awful voice. Yuck voice. Come with me.
All phones blowing up, they're ringing my doorbell. I feel the love, I feel the love.
Well, I think you should put on this hat, yes? And then I want you to go in there being disappointed in Arnold and how he's defying traditional gender roles with this Nazi boy singing. Sit, grumpy, and then as the song changes, gradually change your mind.
One, two, three, drink. One, two, three, one, two, three, drink. One, two, three, one, two, three, drink. Throw them back till I lose count. I'm gonna swing from the chandelier, from the chandelier.
And this is where you should start changing your mind.
I'm gonna live like tomorrow doesn't exist. Like it doesn't exist. I'm gonna fly like a bird in the night. Feel my tears as they dry. I'm gonna swing from the chandelier, from the chandelier.
Dad. That's my boy. That's my son.
Dad? I'm not sexually attracted to women.
I'm proud of you. Even though you're gay. Because it doesn't matter that you're gay. What matters is that you're a good person.
I think that's my favorite cover of that song.
Mm.
He's got a beautiful voice. His name is Keegan Joyce. He's got a gorgeous voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some pipes on him.
Yeah, seriously. So I love that scene. And I think on the one hand, maybe it set him up for disappointment.
Was such a great acceptance from Ellen.
On the other hand, maybe it made him strong enough to be able to come out to his dad And maybe that might be helpful for some people, you know, because, you know, coming out's scary. So here's the actual coming out.
Thanks, everyone, for coming. Another year older. As you go, have anything else to say?
That's what you want. That's fine. It's fine.
Okay. Also, Mum, Dad, Steve, I love you.
I love you too, kiddo. Oh,
here we go, dog.
I'm pretty confident you love me too, and I have something to tell you. I'm not sure how you'll react.
Oh, fuck, he's coming out.
Shut up, Steve. You're not coming out.
I hope you understand and react with compassion, and even if you don't, I want you to know that I love you anyway. It's taken me a long time to come to terms with it, but I'm not attracted to girls. I have no romantic feelings for girls. I have a boyfriend, Josh, and he's helped me realize that my best chance at happiness is to be honest.
Yeah, bro, we know. I almost have to delete your porn off the computer.
You have to delete it.
Oh, that's sweet.
I knew. I read your diary.
All right, well, good job. Got me backed into a corner here. Very dramatic speech. Everyone looking at me like I'm the bad guy. We'll talk about this later.
Shut up, Dad. Just tell him he's done a good job and needs some cake.
All right, shut up, will you? Or it's a shock.
It isn't, though, is it?
You know that honesty is very important to me, to us. You know it's number one. I've always said that. You know what? I just can't believe you lied to me.
I just don't.
Don't interrupt. You lied. You did. Steve, you talked about your porn. Why is it that you didn't feel that you could be open with me? That is the biggest problem.
Dad, my crock-and-boosh!
For fuck's sake, Bruce, why don't you slap his crock-and-boosh?
Oh, crock-and-boosh!
By the way that Matt titled all these sound clips makes it very easy for me to find them, but this one is for fuck's sakes.
Why would you slap his crock and booch? You know how I walked around my apartment for like 2 days going, oh, crock and booch.
That's a new swear, by the way. I need to like isolate the sound of just crock and booch and use that as one of my swear replacements.
Absolutely. Oh, it's such a fun word to say, especially in an Australian accent.
So one of the things that kind of gets me about this one is the dad goes on and on about how it's because he wasn't honest. Meanwhile, later, it's no. Anytime he displays anything about being gay, his dad gets angry. It's not about the fact that he lied. It's the dad is trying to come up with an argument to make him the bad guy. Because, well, dad can't be the bad guy, so his son has to be the bad guy. And it angers me.
Yeah, he's neutralizing his own kind of culpability and his son's like shame and kind of how and also Arnold has been in and out of a mental institution, and how much did his father's intolerance contribute to that?
And how much his dad tried to like prevent him from being gay, because we hear that he pulled him from chorus because, well, that's a gay thing, and you can't like butterflies. That's a gay thing, and things of that nature. And so he had that his whole life. And while the dad might not realize how much he'd done that, he definitely had. And, you know, your ideas, they come out. They come out.
How great is the brother, though?
I love him. You know what? I didn't like him when we first met him at the season opener. But when you found out that, you know, he deleted the porn, you're like, oh, he's actually a pretty decent guy. I will say that when the brother's like, oh, shit, he's coming out. So one of my brothers, I come from a large family. One of my brothers, whenever somebody has an announcement, he goes, you're pregnant. And then when you go, no, he's like, you're coming out. It's like, stop it. So it's like, anytime you try to announce anything, it's really funny when he gets it right, but and with 8 siblings, that happens. But it's just like, when he did that, all I could think of was my brother, and I was like, oh geez. But yeah, it's harsh, and there's definitely a lot of like Josh is newly discovering his gayness, right? And then the second serious relationship he has is somebody who's in the closet. So it's like he just jumped out of the closet and now he's gotta like hide. It's very, you know, uncomfortable, I'm sure.
It actually, as a coming out, went better than I anticipated. Because his mother and his brother were so supportive.
Yeah, yeah.
So it could have been much worse.
Yeah.
Instead, they were really like we knew.
Yeah.
Although I kind of wish they would have said something, like maybe coaxed him out a little bit more, kind of like how Claire got Josh to realize right. it. Sort of like, you don't have to, like, I've been deleting your porn. Like, I know you're gay. That's okay. I love you. Like, whatever. Like,
yeah. It's, you know, it's a sticky situation because you never know how people are going to react and where they are on their own journey because they have to be able to accept it themselves. I have a very good friend who, while he was definitely like out to me, got very offended that his mother asked him if he was gay. And he told her no. And when he, after he had been, you know, out to everybody but his mother, and he finally came out to his mom, like, she lost it. And while you'd think, well, she asked him, she seemed supportive, but it was, she asked him because she wanted him to tell her no.
Mm-hmm.
And she it's asked awful. Him at a time that he wasn't ready. And maybe had she waited, it might have gone better. Or maybe it would have always been bad. I don't know. It's just one of those things. It's like you want somebody to self-identify, but maybe if there's a better way to say that, just so you know, and I've learned that I've had to say this to people in my life, and I try to tell all my nieces and nephews this, but just so you know, I love you. And if you're gay, straight, asexual, identify as a different gender, what? Anything that you do, even if you think you've done something wrong, I am still going to love you and you can always come to me. Because even when you're the most accepting, there's still that huge anxiety of coming out, especially to family.
It's good to preempt like that.
Yeah.
To really.
Because just having, you know, other people on the spectrum in your life and loving them and having them be part of your kid's life isn't enough to show them that you'll accept them, apparently. And so that's what I've been trying to do. It's not always easy. It's really funny when other people, like if you're at a party or whatever, you know how like kids, they start talking about, I have a boyfriend at school or all this, these things. It's like, oh, cool. What's his name? Okay. Do you have a girlfriend? What? And then like other people at the party are like, what is she doing? And it's just me trying to ensure that.
Start the conversation.
Yeah, I want them to know that right away. Aunt Nutty is fine.
To me, like, I hate these parents who have these, who are so controlling. And to me, like, I expected my kid to be like me. Mm-hmm. And that was crazy because my child is not like me, and parents shouldn't have these expectations that their kids are going to be just like them. And you need to, as a parent, be open to who your child is as a person instead of expectations that you have for them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The parents that want to decide who their children are going to be are often in for a rude awakening.
Yeah.
My very opinionated sister is all into athletics and no kid of my, no, my kid's going to do this and they're going to, you know, she's going to play basketball and she's going to do this and she's going to do that. Oh, she likes dance. Oh, she's a musical theater nerd at age 5. How did I get a musical theater nerd at age 5? You know, these things will happen just as, you know, your big Star Trek dork is going to end up with possibly somebody that is not into Star Trek or gaming or any of the games.
Okay. Oh, I can't stand that person, that hypothetical child.
It might happen, and you'll just have to find other things that they love that you're going to be into.
Totally get it. Yeah. But I will say that things end up going, I think, okay for Arnold in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Arnold eventually gets some closure. I will say Arnold has definitely some quirks that he's a picky vegetarian. I have no problems with vegetarians, but sometimes it's like, don't preach to me. And I don't like when other people talk about what I'm eating to begin with. So if you tell me, you know, how I'm murdering people or murdering animals, but on the same regard, you know, I wouldn't ask a vegetarian to come over when I kill a chicken to eat it. So
no, he also dropped the gravy before Christmas lunch.
Yes.
Because he's a vegetarian, he tried to sabotage the meal. No, which he didn't, but no, they were just teasing him.
Although I do feel really bad for him when they ran over the rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
That was the worst date ever. Well, one of. I don't know. I think the one date Josh was on where he couldn't stop talking about the color of the guy's skin was probably very...
Oh, that was weird. The Aboriginal guy, right?
So I was watching... I think it was Trevor Noah's special. I think it was his Netflix special. And he was talking about how when he went to Australia, it was weird that there were no black people. Very unlike when he went to Scotland, where it wasn't weird that there were no black people. That there was a very different vibe because Australia has black people. So why wasn't he seeing any of them? You know, kind of a thing. So I think there's a whole level there that I don't quite understand because I've never been to Australia. Is that something that you can talk about, Matt, or any of your experience?
No, I didn't meet very many people with Aboriginal backgrounds. I did go through the center of the country to Alice Springs, where you will find Uluru/Ayers Rock. And in Alice Springs that you'll find more Aboriginal people. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I've certainly heard stories like when the Olympics came to town to Sydney, how it displaced people, and you know, and I've seen movies like Rabbit Proof Fence, and I've heard about the purging of the minority population. Same thing happened in this country. Same thing happens everywhere.
Taking children from families, things of that nature.
Yeah. There is a past there, and Josh is trying to show that he's progressive, but when he's on that date going, you know, like, I don't care that you're this way, and I apologize on behalf of my people what you've done to you. And it's like, you know what, maybe don't say anything because you're saying everything wrong.
You know, it's like, I really feel like if we're going to go to the whole Seinfeld thing, later on, Josh would go, oh, yeah, I dated a black guy once. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
You made a black guy very uncomfortable once. You know, it's like, you know, as Jerry said, I have a black friend. Yeah, that guy that moved my furniture. No, it's just like, no, it's terrible. Yeah. So it's just it was a very uncomfortable date. Not as even more so than telling the guy that did Reiki that it was BS, or the guy that is what he saw when he saw his grandmother glowing. That didn't happen. There's a whole montage of really bad dates, and Josh does not come out as a winner in any of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he can be a real sweet guy, too.
Yeah. And he's very supportive of the people that are in his life. Like, they will make jokes at each other and they will do digs. But, you know, for instance, when Claire decides to go get an abortion, he goes with her. And
yeah. And the thing about Claire, like, you know, they're dating, she breaks up with him, and then they slowly start a friendship, like they start over, like their relationship starts over, and they get very close. And then she leaves for a while and she comes back, and then Yeah, that whole story arc with the abortion was amazing.
It really was. And I think that her relationship with Josh, you know, after they break up, becomes a stronger and a better one, a more valuable relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the conversation afterwards.
So I made fried chicken, and I was thinking maybe I'll say some irrational feelings that I've had over the weekend in like a monotone voice, and then you can do the same. And what we'll do is we just won't judge each other's feelings. Yeah?
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I've had a lot. I thought that my politics would keep me safe from my feelings, and I was wrong.
Okay. I got jealous that you could get pregnant.
I dressed up for the abortion clinic.
I mean, that is a nice dress that you're wearing. That is a good dress.
Yeah, but I think I just didn't want them to think I was like the other girls. I'm furious at myself for thinking that.
I accidentally fantasized about keeping the baby.
I picked out outfits.
Some of those hilariously tiny sneakers, perhaps?
No, no way. Not on my kid.
All right.
Are we done?
I mean, I'm out of things.
I feel guilty.
Yeah? Okay, look, I know you know. Okay, I'll just say, you have nothing to feel guilty about. Obviously, right?
Yeah, maybe not guilty, but, like, just kind of like a fuck-up. Because flushing the toilet, it just reminded me of that time I forgot to feed Bert and Ernie and I had to flush them down the toilet.
Yeah.
It's just, this is it. Like, we're grown-ups. This is it. We're not practicing anymore.
Shit is getting real.
It's kind of like when we were talking before about how Josh is trying to rationalize his feelings towards his mother, saying it's not, you know, I can't be angry with you. It's your illness. Even though it's a rational thing you do when you say, I'm just exercising my right over privacy over my body to make a decision about my health, I can't help but feel guilty because society has reinforced like this kind of feeling like I should have. And also I'm just sad about like a loss of potential.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter how she's trying to rationalize it. It hurts emotionally for her. I feel so bad for her.
Yeah. I don't think there's a soul who goes through something like that without some negative feelings. And to think that anyone's blasé about it is short-sighted. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. What was so amazing about that arc? It was the whole chicken, the Beyonce and Adele and Shakira.
Yes.
And Beyonce. No, Adele. Adele turned out to be a rooster. So they had to, if they took it to a farm, they would kill it. So they were, well, it might as well be us.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Claire killing the chicken went along with what was going on with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that was great.
It also explains why when she got back from Germany, she was so kind of rude and just not very pleasant to be around, especially with Tom's new girlfriend.
Yep.
Jenny, I think it was.
Was it Jenny at that point?
Jenny or Ella? I can't remember.
Oh, no, it was Jenny. It was the high schooler.
Was it Jenny?
Yes.
She just wasn't the way that she was in season one. And you're kind of like, why is she like this? Then you find out that it's because she has this big secret, this big cloud over her.
Yeah.
And at the end of that episode, they've been building this like cardboard city for like a couple episodes. And it's just sort of like a thing that's in the background. And then you find out that Tom has just been waiting for a good excuse to put the entire thing together, and then they're going to put the dog in the middle of it, and he's gonna go around and destroy it. Like, he's, you know, but the dog, Josh is like, he's a pacifist. So they said, well, Claire, do you feel like smashing some things or ruining civilization? And she puts on the frog costume from earlier in the season and smashes it, and this awesome music plays, and they're holding signs that say Claire Zill, and they're cheering her on. It's like, this is a thing that great friends can do for you in your life. They can really build you back up.
Yep. Absolutely.
Might be my favorite scene of the show.
It's a great scene.
I pulled another clip of just the friends being friends. It's the episode where Tom eats this truffle mac and cheese, this truffle oil mac and cheese out of the fridge. And Josh is like, uh-huh. And then he locks Tom in his bedroom all day.
Yes. So what I loved about this episode where, okay, so... Yeah, Tom had eaten the mac and cheese made with the truffle oil that had been given to Josh by Patrick. So it was like his last memory of Patrick. So Josh punishes him by putting all of this furniture in front of his bedroom door. And this felt so real to me because my husband, when he and his friend were living together, the punishments that they would give each other for things like not flushing the toilet, being late on a bill, was they would fire airsoft guns at each other and they couldn't block. Yeah. So this just felt so real to me and less violent.
I'm hungry.
Oh, would you like some macaroni and cheese? I made some macaroni and cheese. It's delicious. It has special truffle oil in it.
Sorry, okay, I didn't know.
Yeah, you get a pizza. Me and Claire might get a pizza. Do you want a pizza, Claire?
Yeah, I'd like a pizza.
Will I be allowed pizza?
No.
How about Mexican pizza?
No, Mexican pizzas are stupid. That does not make sense.
I love Mexican pizza.
Oh, well, then maybe we should get a delicious Mexican pizza.
Nobody likes you.
I think that we should probably give Tom some pizza.
Okay, Tom. You can have some pizza, but what you have to do is you have to order it. And when you order it, you have to ask for extra jalapenos, except instead of saying jalapenos, you have to say jalapenos.
It's the stupidest middle class dare I've ever heard.
Yes, brilliant. Well, it will not be an issue.
No, I'm not doing that.
Can you get me a Hawaiian?
Hi, I'd like to order two pizzas, please.
Yep.
Can I please get a Mexican pizza and a Hawaiian pizza?
Okay,
pick up
or delivery.
Thomas?
Hey. Can I please get that Mexican pizza with extra jalapenos?
Jalapenos?
Yeah. Jalapenos.
Yeah. This is the silliness that makes it delightful.
Mm-hmm. I like the hot tub scenes.
Oh yeah,
and just them sitting and eating. Just like the end, it ends perfectly with Tom and Josh sitting on the couch eating.
Yes, it does.
Oh, the episode when Ben comes over for the first time and they're having this sort of like a new romance. It's just supposed to be a hookup. But instead, they're really finding them that they have a connection. They're having these conversations, and they're like in the hot tub. And Claire just comes out and sits in the hot tub. And they're like, "Can you please leave?" And she's like, "Nope, I have to go because she and Tom are playing a penis or not penis or is that
yeah. It's like, are you thinking of a penis or not thinking of a penis? And if I guess it right, you have to either tell me the truth or you have to do a dare.
Just a funny little.
Yeah.
Funny little thing.
So it was one of those, can you leave? Nope. Not for another minute. I must be in this awkward position. And there's so many little things like that just crack me up. And like the episode where they have to pay the plumber because somebody put a tampon down the toilet, which was a big, like, who did that kind of a thing. As the
you
backdrop.
Know it's not a girl, right?
I know. This is the thing that gets me. I keep seeing things that's like these PSAs about what not to flush. And anytime there's any plumbing incident, people look at the women and go, you didn't put a tampon down there, did you? I don't know a single woman who has ever thought, hey, this is flushable because, you know, it expands. So yeah, I should flush it.
Not just that, but wouldn't your mother tell you?
Yeah, that's
after your first period. Like this is you're a woman now. Your body is changing. You will use this sanitary napkin. Don't flush it down the toilet.
Right.
I think that people with ovulating systems are more aware of what goes down a toilet and what does not than most people without that kind of a system. Because, I'm sorry. You guys put some weird things down the toilet sometimes. Condoms don't go down the toilet. I don't know why you think they do. They don't. But that's one of those things. It's like, I understand not getting the talk about don't flush your condoms because people just don't talk about anything having to do with sex. But didn't we all kind of learn you don't do that? And then in the end, we find out, yeah, no, it was a guy.
Yeah.
And his explanation was pretty perfect. I wanted to know what it was. How did it work? Okay. Makes sense.
There was one episode that I didn't like because it felt too sitcom-y. It's the episode where Tom has chlamydia or had chlamydia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was trying to slip a pill into his girlfriend Ella's food or whatever.
Which is heinous.
It's really like a low point, I think. Yeah.
This is one of the moments where I was like, yeah, Tom, you're not that nice a guy that you think you are.
This didn't sit well with me.
Yeah, me either. Like, consent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because on the one hand, he lied about not have ever being tested.
Uh-huh.
And on the other hand, he doesn't tell her about a potential risk that she's dealing with. And then he gives her medication without her consent. Like, mm-hmm. You've got three giant problems right there.
And Josh is a co-conspirator in this thing.
And Josh is a co-conspirator, and then Claire ends up becoming a co-conspirator.
It doesn't have our characters in the best light.
No.
It's too goofy with the kind of like shenanigans of trying to get it in the stuff. It didn't seem like add a piece with the rest of the show, but it did give me the first really good glance at who Ella was as a character, because she gives a speech, now to cue it up, where she tells Tom, like, kind of scolds him but doesn't scold him. But like, I feel like at least this scene kind of redeemed the rest of that particular episode.
Exactly. And Ella's kind of awesome.
She's really awesome.
I have chlamydia.
Oh. Well, why didn't you just tell me?
Because now you're going to break up with me.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
Why?
Because of the time I lied about having a sexual health test because I couldn't be bothered going across the road to buy condoms.
Oh. Damn it. Now I have to get angry at you, and I don't want to get angry, but I have to as a way of respecting myself. And the frustrating thing is that I don't know what to say because I can tell that you already know how bad what you did was. Did you get symptoms? Did it hurt? Were you really scared? Okay, good. Well, if you're in pain and fear, then I don't have to be as angry at you.
It felt really bad.
I'm not going to break up with you, but I need to make sure that you know that that doesn't mean that I don't value myself. I value myself, okay? The reason that I'm not going to break up with you is that I, too, have lied to people for my own selfish reasons. I'm just a better liar than you, so I got away with it, okay? I understand why you lied, but I don't like it. And if I was the type of person to get angry, then this is a situation where I might slap you or maybe scratch your neck, okay?
Okay.
Okay, good.
I'm really sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I do have good news.
What's that?
I already disinfected you and you don't have worms.
That pill was chlamydia medication.
Yes.
That's clever.
Yeah. So I think it's about more than just him knowing that she respects herself, but maybe that him knowing that what he did is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's really wrong. Yeah.
And maybe telling him it was clever to sneak me medication, not so hot. But yeah, that was very uncomfortable. And then they tortured Alan and May because he tells her that Grace might have worms. And that's not nice to do to new parents.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah, that whole episode was too kooky for me.
Yeah.
But I did like that speech.
Yes. And I like Ella because, and I kind of like her reaction there, because there are times when you're confronted with information and it's like, I don't want to have to feel what I have to feel about this. Because our emotions don't always make sense, right? And so, like, something that logically you would think this is a deal breaker, when you're in the moment, maybe it's not, because there are other things that are stronger. And while they didn't explicitly state that, it kind of felt like, I know that feeling. It's like, I need to be really angry at you right now, but I'm not willing to get to the point that you're expecting me to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very good speech.
Yes. And I don't know. I do think the way that the show ends, where, you know, after his mom dies, and then he sells the house, and then he has all this money, which then he just spends on this apartment that's horrible. It just seemed like so grand. And I guess it was just one of these things that, like, you don't really realize how privileged Josh is until the last episode. And you're like, oh, God, this kid has no actual worries. Like, he is upper middle class all the way. And it felt very disjointed from the rest of the series.
You know what? I don't like the very, like, last 5 minutes or so. It kind of just ends, and I don't like that Ella and Tom break up, and unsettled. But I mean, I'd say the first part of it was really good, like the funeral, the kind of.
Yes, I agree, and I'll actually play that clip.
She was very special thing one.
Yes.
Okay.
I can't begin to imagine how you must be feeling.
Just bad. That's the answer. Yeah, death is really bad. That's the worst thing.
What does it feel like?
Today, mostly, I feel isolated because just nobody cares about her as much as I did. And that's, like, people have been very nice to me. They've been very good when I'm standing in front of them. But then they go off and they get worried about dinner or tax or SeaWorld. And just, I just wish there was someone else that cared about it as much as I did, you know? Like, I get it. She's actually not very interesting. Like, in the scheme of the world, she's just an average lady. But she was a very big, very special thing to me.
Yeah. And I think the dealing with having to sell the house and dealing with having to clear out his mom's house and everything, that was really important. It got a little focused on these fancy apartments and the amount of money he got for the house. And
I would agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, I don't know if that's normal, like, when you're buying something in Australia. Is it always an auction? I don't know.
Yeah, it was funny to have two auctions.
Yeah.
In the same episode.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know, watching the show, you know, everybody does this. You're binging a show, you get towards the end, you dread the end because you love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
But when it ended, it felt like it was time for it to end.
It was final. It closed.
Yes.
Yeah.
It wrapped up.
I will say that the episode where his mother dies has made it to the top of my list of most difficult episodes to watch. It is worse than The Body to me.
Really? Because it's... tell us why.
I think it's the way that his mom went. I think the mental health aspect maybe hits a little too close to home for me. And maybe it's because even though he's in his 20s and he's probably about the same age that Buffy was, he's more of an adult. And so it kind of resonates a little more for me because, you know, The Body, even when I saw The Body originally, I was not living in my mother's home. I was living on my own. So it was a very different kind of situation. Whereas this, it's a constant communication with your mother, but at the same time, you have your own life, you have your own thing going on. And I think to me that it just hit home a lot harder and felt more like something I might have to deal with.
Go ahead, please.
To me, it's tragic because it's such a struggle. Like, it was such a struggle over the series, and it's like she lost. It's like she, you know, her mental illness won.
Mm-hmm.
To me, is why it's so sad. It's terribly sad.
All the progress she made,
you're right, means nothing.
Yeah, because she was working so hard and she did obtain so much, but I don't think it was for nothing. You know, in the grand scheme of things, I think had she succeeded in her first attempt, there would be so much less for Josh. because he wouldn't have had those great conversations with his mom, and he wouldn't have really gotten to know who she actually is. Which I think is one of the best parts of this show is the mother-son relationship. It's that transition from being a child to being an adult and having an adult relationship with your parent, you know, where you actually like each other.
Yeah. Well, Alan is interesting too, because you don't think that he's going to be as, you know, emotionally available as he is. You think he's going to be the aloof dad, masculine dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's not.
You think he's going to be that stereotypical divorced dad thing, and he's really not. He's so vulnerable in this. So what were your thoughts on the Rose passing, Matt?
Oh, it's a bit like someone who survives a bout of cancer and then dies of cancer later, and it's this disease is so aggressive and persistent that it felt kind of inevitable, almost like she was living on borrowed time, which is really sad. I feel like when they went to dinner and she got to say her final speech, which is another clip I pulled. Get that ready to go, Nutty. Yep. She got to say what she wanted to say. She had this great experience. She paid for the meal. It's almost like she was saying goodbye at that moment, but I didn't.
You didn't realize.
Know that she was going to.
Yeah.
It's kind of like hindsight being 2020. You're kind of like, oh, I should have seen that coming.
Like that was her note. You know, her suicide note.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to say a few things. Now, putting aside when you're a bit of a brat with your dad, you're a great person, Josh. No, you are. Now, I don't know if we just got lucky or if I owe your dad and Auntie Peg more credit than I ever gave them. It definitely wasn't my doing. You are a very special young man. And I just want to let you know how thankful I am for that. And that I'm very proud of you.
Okay. That was a lot.
Well, no, I don't care. That's what you get for treating us just this nicely.
Okay, Dad, tell me everything you want to tell me about the house.
Well, I was just going to say that when you find someone to move in, ask them if they have a partner. Otherwise, you'll be copying two for the price of one, and they'll be paying half price. I'm going to the door.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, you're embarrassed by your parents, but you're just like, okay, I know the thing you're about to tell me, but you so desperately want to tell me because to me, I'm still like 5 years old and I'm not 20, but go ahead and tell me. Tell me about the house. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. The dad, every time he tells him about how to take care of the house and all of those things, like that's a comfortable way that he can show him that he loves him, kind of a thing. It's a safe topic. But there's that scene is so great because they drink a bit much and like the dad goes to the bathroom and he comes back and he sits down with the wrong family.
And you know, early, I'm sorry, Nettie, go ahead.
Go.
They're early on in the series. There is a scene. They're at the house. Alan is there. He's walking around in the background. All of the young people are sitting in the living room and he farts and that it's like they keep it in. You know, it's like it was a mistake, but they keep it in because you can tell all the actors are looking at each other like, what just happened?
And things like that happen. Like those are the little elements that make it feel so real. Like I had
Go ahead. No, you tell your story.
I was going to say, I had a professor once that she didn't even notice when she would fart. Like she would just fart. And she was amazing. She was so brilliant. And then one day, my friend, he meets me outside of class. It was an evening class. And I'm talking to her. We're having a lovely conversation. And then we walk away and he goes, oh my God, how many times did she fart while we were talking? And I'm like, yeah, you kind of get used to it. And it's, so from then on, he kept saying, he's like, oh, should I take biology with Sister Mary Putt-Putt? And I'm like, oh, don't call her that. Now that's all I can think of her. And I can't think of her name because it's been emblazoned with Sister Mary Putt-Putt. But she was amazing. She was so brilliant. And like, you didn't care. It just happened.
My parents were visiting me nearly a month ago. Mm-hmm. And I queued up this dinner scene for them where they're wine tasting, because my mother asked the same question when I went wine tasting with my parents. How do you get the fruit in the wine? the different scents of the fruit, because you get the berry scent, the whatever, the black fruits. And my mother asked that same question. Like, no, it's just the wine sometimes tastes differently depending on the soil and the climate. Yeah. So they don't actually infuse the wine with additional fruits, unless it's sangria
or some very bad fruit wine.
So it's just, I was like, this is you. this woman, his mother is my mother. And while we were wine tasting, these two young girls who were like from the Hilton, they were like hospitality people from the Hilton, were like, she's so cute. They're like, my mother, she's so cute. Well, I'm like, all right.
If you say so.
Say so. To me, it's embarrassing, but you should know by now.
Yeah. I'm one of those heathens. I don't know much about wine. I just know what I like. And I know that, okay, that person has a palate that's similar to mine. So whatever he decided or she decided, I'll take that. That person has a palate very different than mine. I'm not going to drink what they're drinking. And that's how I know wine.
Yeah. I mean, like wine or not, or drink classy wine, or, you know, $10 wine, whatever is fine. But she, my mother ought to have known in her 70s that they don't infuse wine when they talk about certain characteristics of what you're smelling and tasting.
Like, there's not bits of wood. That's not how you taste the oak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I will say, the more expensive, the better wine generally tastes. It is true. I wish it weren't so, unfortunately.
I want you to play that Ella and Tom clip. Okay. It's not related to anything except that I love Ella so much.
Yes. You know, Tom gets a lot of like very interesting girlfriends, and it starts out where he has this horrible girlfriend that he doesn't treat all that well, but at the same time, you seem to like excuse it because she's horrible.
She's so passive aggressive.
She
awful.
Shows up at a funeral after they broke up, and Rose just like turns to her and she's like, what are you doing here? Leave. You're not welcome.
I didn't realize you were still part of this group.
Yeah.
Maybe it's best if you go.
It was great. So the fact that he finds someone like Ella, who is very much on his level, is really great.
Except. Well, Neve is his first girlfriend.
Yeah.
Announces that she's pregnant and doesn't take a pregnancy test. Just to string him along, you know? Manipulate. It's manipulation.
Totally. And she knew what she was doing. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know. I think she did. All right, here we go.
Hey, guess what?
What?
We got the place.
What place?
The loft place.
Which one?
The one with the kitchen.
We got it! Yay! So what does that mean?
We can sign the lease on Friday.
Whoa. Yeah.
Are you happy?
Am I happy? That is the saddest question.
It's hard to tell behind me. Hat and sunglasses look like my dad.
Ah, it's interesting. Do I remind you of your dad when you're all up in my grill with your D? Do I remind you of your dad when we're doing a little sexy role play and I'm playing the role of your daddy?
Yeah, you really commit. Yeah.
Do I Do I remind you of your dad? When I met your little pet lunch, put a little secret note and said, yes, my good boy.
My dad never made me lunch, actually.
Do I remind you of your dad?
Sore point.
Hey, have a good day at school.
Hi, guys, I see you have putting a bit of mumbling, like just the tiniest little bit in this confetti cannon and then setting it off.
I mean, yes, of course, let's.
Quite possibly one of the ways to distribute, one of the best ways to distribute ashes.
Is to put it in a confetti cannon?
Yes. That sounds great to me. I love it. And honestly, that scene just showed that to me foreshadowed the end of Tom and Ella.
It did, but it still felt like it came out of nowhere. But I guess some of it was built around their dynamic of being three friends in that one house. And so when Josh was moving away and it was just Tom and Ella, she like recalibrated what their relationship was like, and she felt it like lacking in some way.
Yeah.
But it just kind of felt like all of a sudden.
Yeah. Well, and you know, when they were thinking of moving out, and Josh wasn't moving out, she was very reluctant. And I think that really she needed Josh there to make her relationship work.
I felt like their relationship was coming to an end.
Yeah. Because like if she moves in with Tom, then it's going to become something else. Because I'm sorry, no matter what happens, when you move in with somebody and it's just you and just them, it's a very different dynamic. It is different than dating. Just as even if you've lived with somebody, when you get married, it's a different dynamic. And I don't think a lot of people realize how much things are going to change.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she figured it out on moving day was surprising.
Right. Well, she didn't want to admit it. I just think she's so smart and so funny, which we heard in those previous two clips when she articulated her feelings so well. And then in this one, she's like, you know, so silly and doing voices. Like she's like the perfect person to me. Like I'm like, she's my type, I guess. So when she broke up with Tom, it's like it's so sad because it's like she was the best. Like, Tom, you fucked it up somehow. I don't know how, but you fucked it up.
If you are an Ella type, hunt Matt down.
Well, she's a manic pixie dream girl.
Oh, I guess that's probably true.
Yeah, she really is, especially like the way that they met her. And
Especially starting out.
Yeah. I thought she was going to be another Neve when they met her, because I was like,
I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. Yeah. Like, what's wrong with her?
Right. But then she became somebody that I really did enjoy. And I'm like, yeah, Tom, you don't deserve her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're better.
But I also kind of like in the last season, Claire drifts from everybody. And while I don't like that in the sense that I like my characters to be together, it does represent that whole thing that, you know, as you get older and different things take priorities in your life, you do lose your friends and your friends move on. And this idea that you'll be best friends forever does not actually last. And that you can be close to somebody. Yeah. And you can be close to somebody. And then when Josh's mom dies, you can see how you can be completely close to somebody and not see them for a while and still get that emotional support from them. And then, you know, like he has that great heart to heart with her. And then it's not like they're in each other's lives that much anymore. They're friends. And when they get together, they have that strong connection, but they're not actually in each other's lives.
Mm.
Another very real point. But I do want to play one clip before we finish up. And that is the very uncomfortable Christmas dinner. Where is that?
Which I referenced earlier.
Yes. I'm trying to remember. Is it you are very... Yes, this should be it.
I just want to say a few things.
Nope, that's not it. No. Wrong dinner. No, it's the trifle. There we go.
Did you know there are people out there who didn't have Christmas lunch today, and here we are with all this food, and it's just going to go to waste?
Just thought it might be nice to have a variety of desserts.
Pretty worked up about the dessert, Josh.
Sorry.
Dessert is stress back.
No, Tom, you can't feed him chocolate.
That's a myth.
Yeah, remember when he vomited?
His punch is so warm.
Yeah, it's really not drinkable without ice. I mean, there's red wine, but I don't like drinking red wine during the day.
Then go and get ice, Dad. Okay, I didn't know Tom was going to forget the ice. I'm sorry, but that's the situation we're in, okay? So either leave and get ice or shut up.
Oh, he always gets so worked up around Christmas.
No, actually, it's not Christmas's fault. Let's not blame Jesus. It was having to hang out alone every year with you and Dad and Peg just pecking at me. Just peck, 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 peck.
I just want to have a good time.
You know? I know I'm being unfair, and I'm sorry, okay? But fuck! When I say to you I don't want to talk about it, why can't you stop talking about it?
Son, this is about Arnold and Ben.
Actually, no, I thought I was pretty clear, okay? This is about you. I'm frustrated with you, okay? Claire keeps telling me how disappointed she is with her life instead of going out and creating herself a better life. Tom keeps making the most horrible choices, and everyone pretends that it's not his fault. It is your fault, Tom. Ella, it is Tom's fault. Everything. You probably should have left. Hannah. Wow, no one's allowed to make fun of Hannah. And May. Well, May's fine. Although I don't really understand why you bought me a book of easy midweek recipes. You know I know how to cook.
It was cheap.
Fair enough. Dad isn't capable of communicating with me about feelings, so instead, he just talks about chores that need to be done all the time. Mum, well, it's pretty obvious that you've made the choice to go off your medication again. You're going to be depressed in 2 days again, and then you're going to expect me to be there to help again. Okay, this is not about Arnold, this is not about Ben, this is not about Jesus, all right? This is about you. And to be honest, I run out of things to say, but I'm not going to stop talking because I appreciate that I'm as bad as you, and I know as soon as I stop talking, you're going to say something that's probably quite embarrassing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this trifle, and I'm going to go.
To Arnold?
No.
Ben?
No, I'm going to go and sit alone in a park with my dog and a trifle.
Yeah,
and he goes to a park and sits and sits traffic.
Yes,
I love that. Like, and I'm not going to stop talking because as soon as I do, you're going to throw all of what I said back in my face. I have to go now. Right, bye.
I wish I had thought of doing that in similar situations. I'll just keep talking till I leave. Then you can't say anything to me.
Right.
Yeah. Holidays can sometimes be the worst, that even though when you love people, it just all that stress because everybody thinks it's going to be this amazing thing or it has to be whatever, because traditionally we've always done it this way, except every year there's the same, you know, there's problems, you know. Oh, what do you mean you don't have, you know, the stuffed mushrooms this year? We always have stuffed mushrooms or whatever. And it's like, yeah, you know what? There's always something different. There's always, you know, something off because we're just too stressed. There's too much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything comes out and all the feelings come out and everybody fights and yells and makes jokes. And yeah, holidays are hard. But yeah, so I think we've really, really did the nice Matt A treatment of this show.
You mean being that as long and in depth and everybody wants to go and they hate me now? Yeah, that's about right.
No, well, I mean, this is definitely one of the longer episodes. Normally, I aim for
You're
an hour.
Welcome.
But you got, you know, 2 hours of trigger warnings and swearing and sadness, but happiness, hopefully.
Hopefully.
And I will actually end with the... There is one more clip that I'm going to end with, but I will do that after everybody says where people can find them on the internet and any other last. First, let's just do some last thoughts. Any closing thoughts about Please Like Me?
My closing thought, because I see that there's one clip there you haven't played yet. So let's just lean into that, unless you were saving it for a special occasion. I love the theme song. It makes me smile and dance and clap along.
Okay, which one do you want me to play? You gave me 3 of them.
No, just the top one that says theme. The other two are just samples of the music, because I think the music is outstanding in this show, too.
Yes.
There we go. And at one point, they actually just, like, he and the mom do the lyrics just in a conversation.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. The The clip I'm actually saving is the Hannah Gatsby one.
Yeah, that's really upsetting.
That's why I'm going to do it after we do all our plugs and everything.
I know. I just wanted to say that the music by the artist, I should look her up right now. Hold on just a second. I want to give credit where credit is due because, like, I bought the soundtrack and I'm listening to it. It's not very long. Bryony Marks is her name. It is, like, it's kind of like essential, the show in a nutshell. Like, musically, it captures the tone of the show, which is light, funny, sprightly, manic, sad.
All warm, the emotions. Warm.
You know, it's a great soundtrack. Yeah. And if you watch the show, you'll just pay attention to the music because it's great. And the theme is great. Yeah.
And you'll notice it because it really does play a part. That I think that the way that they do it is really well done.
Yeah, they up it each time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not just the music, the when they're sitting at the kitchen table and they sing Adele when they're about to kill the rooster or when Arnold sings or, but Josh Thomas has a show in development at Freeform. So I'm hoping that it makes it. I hope to see more of what he has in store.
And that goes to my closing thought, which is give Josh Thomas money to do more shows.
Yeah, I'm so excited. And Hannah Gatsby, like, I can't wait to see what she's going to do here in America.
I loved her character. Like, I had heard about her before I watched Please Like Me, and her special has been on my list, but I haven't had the courage to sit through it all because I know it's gonna take a lot out of me.
Yeah, it will devastate you.
Yeah. So I'm waiting till I'm strong enough. I actually knew of her because of that before I started watching, but her character was so striking to me because this is the kind of depressed character that you never see on TV. Like, you never see somebody like Hannah. And we need to see that. We need to see that kind of depressed character because it's like you could probably have a drink every time I say it's so real and they're emulating life very well. But I think that's an important thing to see. But yes, so my closing thought was give Josh Thomas more money. Let him make more things because this is very profound for me. And
yeah,
this is definitely
special.
TV experience that will stick with me. So, Steph, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, if you want to say hey on Twitter, I'm at Steph Smith. Find us in the Facebook groups, Potential Cast, and I don't know. I guess that's it.
We don't want to wait.
We don't want to wait. Oh, iZombie podcast. Steph. Y'all, I got to get up in a couple of hours. I don't know what I'll say.
Steph's also not the best at self-promotion, but she's awesome. And Matt, where can people find you on the internet?
Matt is wrong about games, Spartacast, and Hooplecast. Next on Hooplecast, we'll be covering Boardwalk Empire and Treme.
Ooh.
And then other HBO shows. We just do the pilots of the first pilot of every HBO drama. We were doing them chronologically because we had to do something since Deadwood ended. But the Deadwood film will be out next year. So we'll be podcasting about that. If one of our hour-long episodes takes 3.5 hours to cover, I imagine that this one will be like a 7 to 8 hour podcast. Probably.
Oh, boy.
Well, I will probably kill my co-host and they will never speak to me again.
Well, that's okay, because then you'll be done. Well, I will say that it's good that you've been doing the HBO seasons because you didn't know that the Deadwood movie was coming out. Everybody had been talking about it forever, but it was always, right. Yeah, that's never going to happen. And now it's actually happening. So you made it happen. Congratulations. Thank you.
Yep. I'll take credit for that. I did not get an invite. Set though, still waiting on that invitation to maybe the rap party. I guess the rap party would be okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you like visited the area while they're filming, you might be able to snag yourself.
Yeah, you
got to
become like good friends with what's his name, Brown.
Yeah.
W. Earl Brown.
Yeah. Become good friends with him and
he'll get you in.
Yeah.
Get the full set tour. Yeah. Just like Mr. Robin.
Yes. Some people we know.
Join us for the Bicast, a podcast by and for the bisexual community.
We discuss and give voice to all of us under the big umbrella, bringing you information, news, entertainment, and support for all.
You can find us at thebicast.org, at the Bicast on Twitter, the Bicast on Tumblr, and Bicast in iTunes. Visit the Bicast page on Facebook and see how you can join the Facebook group.
And remember, you're not wrong, and you are not broken, and you are not alone.
So pull up your favorite comfy chair and relax.
And remember, everybody gets a cookie.
All right, and we're going to play you out with a clip from Hannah Gatsby's special, which I am not strong enough to watch the whole thing. I'm not sure of the timelines, but I have a feeling her role in Please Like Me had a lot to do with her getting a special. Which is funny because it's a completely different kind of.
And this is a and when you're playing this, everyone keep in mind this is a comedy special.
Yeah, it's a comedy special, but it gets like shit gets real.
Yeah.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Remember that story I told about that young man who almost beat me up? It was a very funny story. It was very funny. I made a lot of people laugh about his ignorance. And the reason I could do that is because I'm very good at this job. I actually am pretty good at controlling the tension, and I know how to balance that to get the laugh at the right place. But in order to balance the tension in the room with that story, I couldn't tell that story as it actually happened, because I couldn't tell the part of the story where that man realized his mistake, and he came back, and he said, "Oh, no, I get it. You're a lady faggot. I'm allowed to beat the shit out of yous," and he did. He beat the shit out of me and nobody stopped him. And I didn't report that to the police and I did not take myself to hospital and I should have. And you know why I didn't? It's because I thought that is all I was worth. And that is what happens when you soak one child in shame and give permission to another to hate. And that was not homophobia, pure and simple people. That was gendered. If I'd have been feminine, that would not have happened. I am incorrectly female. I'm incorrect. And that is a punishable offence. And this tension, it's yours. I am not helping you anymore. You need to learn what this feels like, because this tension is what not normals carry inside of them all of the time, because it is dangerous to be different. To the men in the room, I speak to you now, particularly the white men, especially the straight white men. Pull your fucking socks up. How humiliating. Fashion advice from a lesbian. That is your last joke.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at nimlas.org, which has links to everything social media, including facebook.com/group/nuttybites and patreon.com/nukejoss, or call 347-Nutty42.